Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College presents Liberty Mail with the student fellows of Faith and Freedom.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Mail. My name is Grace Riley.
And I'm Katie Kenline.
And we are so happy to have you joining us today. We are in the underground studio at Grove City College for the Institute for Faith and Freedom. And today we're going to be talking about ESG, breaking it down, because it's something that's definitely not talked about, but deserves a very high amount of our attention because of how important it is and how much it's seeping into the business world and just our economy in general. So ESG is essentially using money to accomplish political goals by rewarding and punishing companies effectively. And this primarily targets the oil, gas, and oil and gas industry, but also goes beyond that. And basically, we'll break down exactly what it is and go into detail, but it's giving these companies these sorts of standards and then deciding from their investments and, again, rewarding and punishing companies. And this is really important because it's not only made costs rise with energy, but it's also motivated the very forceful push towards renewable energy and a lot of things we're seeing like that, a lot of leftist policies that go that way and are justified by climate change, other things like that. And this also is all has the potential of ruining American independence and is doing that just in the way that it unfolds. So we're excited to be talking about that today. And Katie will start just by breaking down what it is at its core.
Yeah, so ESG stands for Environmental Social Governance, and Forbes calls it in other words, they say it's ethical investing. So that when you choose ESG investing, you're putting your money to work in companies that are going to make the world a better place and push certain policies. So like you said, a lot of this has targeted divesting from oil and gas industries or fossil fuel industry. But this type of, you know, the side that's very in favor of this, which is a lot of most of what we see is greatly in favor of this. Large corporations, large multinational entities are very in favor of environmental social governance. And they say that they're going to buy shares. Investors, ESG investors, will buy the shares of companies that have demonstrated a willingness to improve their performance in these three areas, which is very interesting. The way we can use influence to push certain agendas is what people say.
Yeah, and just to add in a little bit of perspective, so there are more numbers beyond this, but ESG Today reports that according to a Tufts survey, about 80% of global investors now have sustainable investment policies in place. So this is very, very present in the corporate world, business, and it's really affecting energy and all sorts of things that then in turn affect all of us. So it's really, really a big thing.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the interesting things in all these companies are very in favor of this. You can find on many, many companies' websites, especially if you look at like their government or their public policy arm of a company like Amazon, Microsoft, Google, any of these. But IBM has a whole information on their website all about the history of ESG and why they're so proud to be a part of it. But basically, they talk about how this started in 2000 when the United Nations, so we'll talk more about how the UN and eventually the World Economic Forum played a huge part in ESG. But the United Nations in New York had the Millennium Summit to discuss what they were going to do for the new millennium. And over the course of the summit, they created a guideline of what they wanted to be, what they wanted to see achieved in the world by 2015. So they want this all across the world. And one of the things that they found, they outlined 8 international development goals. Basically, what we've seen now is that really none of them were met. But they have to do with well-being of people across the world. So anything from hunger to fighting AIDS to fighting just all kinds of inequality. And so the same year, the Carbon Disclosure Project was founded, and they encouraged investors to ask the companies they're investing in to start reporting on their climate impact. So this is in 2001. And then by 2002, 245 companies had responded to these investing groups who started asking for climate disclosures. So it's not a new thing, but we see that ESG became official in 2004, so 20 years ago, when there was a report that came out with all kinds of big companies called Who Cares Wins. And it starts to turn the table on. It's not really about how much investment, how much you get a return on your investment. It's actually about if you care enough, like you're going to win the economic game.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in quickly, just since you're speaking about the start of ESG. There's also a story that's just coming out over the past few days about Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock. And he was really kind of the face of and a driving force pushing ESG in the beginning. And he's now walking back on that. People are realizing ESG doesn't work and has actually negative consequences. So I want to read a quote from an American Greatness article just on this story and his walk back from ESG. This is Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock. And it reads, about 9 months ago, Fink began his public retreat from the idea he had made famous. Appearing at the Aspen Ideas Summit last June, Fink explicitly disavowed the use of the term ESG, saying, "I don't use the word ESG anymore," he said, "because it has been entirely weaponized." What he meant of that, of course, was that he didn't like it being associated with the term that had suddenly taken on negative connotation. He didn't like being famous as the guy who built ESG into a massive investment scheme. So those are things coming out now. So tracing back to where ESG came from, some of the people who really drove it forward, now that's where they stand. So that was a little jump ahead, but we'll go back on track.
Yeah, so that's why we see it starts with, in 2004, just the request from investors for climate disclosures. You know, what are you doing? Probably includes information about use of private jets and how much carbon the companies are using. But then we see in the sustainable development goals that were set for 2030 by the UN when they didn't reach their goals that they had made in 2015, we start to see more what ends up being almost taken over and really ideas that are jumped on by groups like World Economic Forum and BlackRock, like you said, the CEO. And so one of the biggest things that came out of this sustainable development goals was that just the idea of a more communal international society. And really what it said is that we want to ensure that it says, if you look on the UN website, that by 2030, all people enjoy peace and prosperity. That's the quote that it says. And really, in my opinion, what we see is one of the goals is almost to break down some separation between governments or international governing bodies like the EU. European Union has played a huge role in this, same as the UN, to say we're going to take into our hands maybe things that should be decided by individual governments or in just international relations between individual sovereign countries, that we're going to have more of a communal international society and we're going to have investment and the business world starts to dictate how things play out. The interesting thing is that the UN website says the society is their last point of these positions they put out in 2015 for 2030 that I think really turns the tide is the creativity, know-how, technology, and financial resources from all of society is necessary to achieve these SDGs, the development goals, in every context. So it's interesting they use the word resources from all of society because if we like look at a definition of what society is, it's a large group of individuals that are sharing the same spatial or social territory, typically subject to the same political authority. So it's really not, it's interesting. They decide to take it to multinational corporations and investment groups, kind of like we see that BlackRock jumps on this to say, oh, we're going to start pushing resources to all of not just society, not all people who live under one government or one type of, we're going to try to influence the world. And I think what we see is it doesn't really work, but they have some great ideas, in their words, for the different parts of ESG.
Well, and the problem is this is a globalist socialist push, right? It's a grasp at controlling the economy globally. And we can even see, so beyond that global scheme, we can look at the United States right now and look at how environmental, and I say environmental in quotes, policies have impacted economics and how policy is being influenced under the guise of climate change. And what I really mean by that is that it is a Trojan horse for socialism and for leftist policies using climate change and the environment and social responsibility to push some of these more radical policies. And as you were just mentioning, these are things that sound great, right? What's wrong with those things? That's something that comes up a lot with these kinds of ideas. But just for example, so this is a little different, but just on a kind of similar note, in the United States, the Biden administration is really pushing for electric vehicles and trying to force them onto Americans. So it's a really big push for renewable energy, for electric vehicles. And that's in the name of things like climate change and the environment. But really, that's taking control of the economy. And it's also stopping the production of American energy. And, you know, obviously fossil fuels comes into that. The oil, gas industry is everything where now the left is kind of moving away from independence on those things, which is extremely problematic for our strength as a nation. So a lot of these things under the claims of being, you know,
good for society as a whole,
good for society as far as the climate goes. It's based upon political propaganda to try to get these policies to pass through. And this is another quick side note. So I started working for Restoration of America, and that's where I'll be working after college. So there's that quick announcement there. But something that we've been working on, I'm late to the project, is a Language Watch series, which is definitely worth checking out for all of you. And I'm bringing it up here not just to plug it, but also because it's extremely relevant to this and this issue, where we've been focusing on different terms. So I'm late to the project. There was a great team that worked on it, partly being Libby Krieger, alumni of Grove City College. You all remember her, former Liberty Mail host. But what they've worked on is putting out videos that are about a minute long on language. The most recent launch is on climate change and how that term has been used to basically usher in political narratives. So how it used to be, you all remember global cooling, you all remember global warming, and now all of a sudden you don't hear that anymore. You just hear climate change because it can be slapped on anything and then be used to say, okay, we need this policy, we need to stop gas cars, we need to whatever it may be. So that in a lot of ways is being used to influence economics. And with ESG, you have basically people trying to achieve political goals and control companies with money through the way that they're investing.
Yeah. And so some of the things that any group, if you look up any of the groups that are talking about ESG, they have these questions that they're saying, you know, we want our investors to ask this. And so under environment, they say, what kind of impact does the company have on the environment? Does the, like, tell us about the company's carbon footprint, what it's doing in terms of its manufacturing process and the supply chain. Social becomes really interesting because they say, and I think this is why we've seen from a lot of companies, especially I think about after Roe was overturned, and the companies that you thought you never, like, you have nothing to do with abortion. You have, yes, you might have women working for you. And it's actually really sad. Like, if you have a pregnant woman working for you, this is where we start to see all kinds of posts, all talking about abortion rights, all this stuff.
Just from the companies when they were...
why is this company, you know, putting this out? But it, or why do all these companies participate in...
why are they making political statements?
Yes. And so one of the things is they say, how does the company improve its social impact, both within the company and in the broader community? So broader community means like influencing local politics, spending money on campaigns, all those things. But it can be everything from LGBTQ equality to racial diversity in both the executive, the people working in the executive suite and all the staff, inclusion programs, hiring practices, and then the governance too. Once again, we see how do they pay people? Is there diversity in their leadership? And so these are the things where we start to see both political motives, especially around abortion and LGBTQ issues, and then the diversity, equity, inclusion, which is really interesting. So they're saying to investors, you know, you need to only invest your money in places where they have really good ESG scores, where they're meeting all this criteria of being really committed to the social the societal well-being for social issues, which is very interesting because the problem is then, you know, to invest money has always been about getting a good return. And especially for people who invest their hardworking money, they are not investing money so they can support a political cause. And the problem is with ESG, we start to see a lot of pressure to say, that's not actually what this is for. It's about the well-being of society as a whole and the world. And what are you going to support? Almost as if it becomes philanthropic and like a political contribution instead.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't even have to get into or explain why this is challenging for companies who don't participate in meeting those standards compared to the big corporations that do. But we also want to read a quote from an opinion piece in the Financial Times. And it says, ESG investing is well-intentioned, confused, utterly ineffective, and probably harmful. It does not change corporate behavior for the better, cannot offer investors consistently better returns. It is not good risk a good risk management strategy. It extracts fees from investors and hands them to financiers, lawyers, and consultants. It's anti-democratic and creates pernicious distraction from the things that do change corporate behavior, such as consumer boycotts and regulatory action.
This is from in Europe. In you know, this is a big newspaper in the UK. It was an opinion piece, but it's interesting. You know, they're not even super conservative, the person writing this, but it's interesting to say there are a lot of problems with this. And it's interesting the CEO of BlackRock saying, you know, maybe I walk back some of the they really thought doing something really great for societal change, but then you start to see, especially in the economy we have right now, how maybe it could be bad. But I think the other thing, speaking of BlackRock and World Economic Forum, is a lot of this came from what is called the Great Reset Initiative. And I think a lot of people think, oh my goodness, that's a conspiracy. But it's actually what it was called. Like, you can actually look up the Great Reset.
Yeah, the Initiative. World Economic Forum has all sorts of problems that I'm sure you're all aware of or we don't need to get into now. But yeah, really, really problematic.
Yeah. But they, the CEO, Klaus Schwab, one of his four components, core components to the Great Reset idea, which just is a scary name, by the way, is utilizing ESG metrics, is a very important thing, and only be investing in companies that have ESG metrics and can show you their societal impact into culture. And the interesting thing, so BlackRock, I know many people know what it is. They manage $10 trillion. Bloomberg says that they're going to be managing $15 trillion in the next 4 years, but they're an asset manager and they get to like invest for other people. And it's just we see they talk all about, you know, we have a number of global challenges. We have climate change. We have increasing inequality, which is interesting to say increasing inequality because I think around the world we see a lot of people coming out of inequality and getting to experience more freedom than ever before. I feel like we're on an upward trajectory in that case in the world.
Yeah.
But there's really, really a push to be very careful in your investment decision-making process. And it's interesting because we see it all over, you know, now this is pretty much essential in the EU. They passed requiring companies to report on in the EU. 50,000 companies in the EU are required to report on their ESG issues. And again, that's where BlackRock is only investing their resources and their portfolio into companies and trusts and everything that support all of this stuff. But that includes DEI. Is a really big thing, diversity, equity, inclusion, which we see in the U.S. too.
Yeah, and companies have been taken over by DEI, and that's something that's been in the news a lot that you can kind of see play out in hiring processes and in just the ways that companies run, the standards that they have, and that's, again, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which goes over companies. So, and that's really become a primary focus in corporate America and in just in companies in general, where I would say that it's pretty difficult to find a company to work at that doesn't have DEI. And these things are completely intertwined, ESG and DEI, which is really important to know and understand that this stuff is going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing is that this is happening with states who invest their mutual funds in the United States. So when we were in D.C. in September, we got to hear, both Grace and I got to hear from the Kentucky State Treasurer, who now she's State Auditor, Allison Ball, and she talked about what ESG looks like in the United States in state investing. And one of the things that she saw what was going on with BlackRock and a bunch of other asset managers around the world and in our country. And so she chose to divest Kentucky's retirement pensions and other public pensions from organizations like this. So she has a very a great opinion piece all about how we view this in just our day-to-day lives here in the U.S. And so she said, what's been less obvious are covert efforts of asset managers like BlackRock to use the hard-earned retirement dollars of Kentucky's public servants to fund their own political agendas, putting our pension systems at greater risk because she's not getting the same return. She said, zealous proponents call it sustainable investing, but don't be confused. That's just a fancy way to describe an investment philosophy that's no longer guided by selecting investments which actually make money. For billionaires in California and New York, this feel-good language is a cover for using someone else's money to support their favorite political causes. And this is a very fiery statement, but I think it's interesting for us to start looking into, you know, where are states investing or divesting funds? And we see in Texas, the Texas Board of Education removed over $8 billion of assets from BlackRock stewardship because of its ESG policies. So I think we've started to see this. It's interesting that started in 2000 and has grown to where in the last really 2 or 3 years we've started seeing it in the U.S. It's hard to find anti-ESG investing. There are very few, I think, because of how popular it is. But it's interesting. We'll see what happens with the CEO of BlackRock kind of walking back some things to see if maybe, you know, it would be great to have an economy focused on getting the best returns for people, corporate workplaces working on getting the best product for people, and to back away a little bit from the social, you know, it's all about just how we look on all these progressive issues and how we're pushing the progressive ball forward instead of, you know, working for the American consumer, investing for return. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And it's something worth paying attention to. And that's another reason why, you know, our leadership and administration makes a difference, because that does determine a lot of our involvement in these more global, you know, groups and initiatives. But it, especially as it can be seen in the United States, it's important for us to pay attention to, because mm-hmm. it is very, very prevalent and impactful here on the ground. And I also just want to make note before we close, because I realize I didn't mention it before, we'll include the link to that Language Watch about climate change mm-hmm. in the description below, just so that you can kind of see how that comes into play. Because even though different, it is related, just since it's on the same kind of line of the efforts and the goals that are taking place to impact political policy and economic policy based upon these terms and pointing to climate change and the environment mm-hmm. and social impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think almost the hot take for this, but it's more, let's bring people down to reality, is that when your average like middle class or single mother in a community, when people go to the grocery store, they aren't going to buy cereal because, oh, Kroger has a diversity, equity, inclusion initiative, or because Kroger, they're not going to buy a certain type of cereal because this company, General Mills, you know, supports LGBTQ and supports abortion. People want the lowest price and the best product. And I think it's interesting, you know, a departure from that. And I think almost corporations are more out of touch. They think they're becoming more in touch with people because they're getting involved in the political social, but maybe they're more out of touch than you've ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point and sums it up really, really well.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining us, and we're so glad to have brought this conversation. It was really fun for us to learn more about this. But also, next week is our annual conference here at the Institute for Faith and Freedom on campus. We'll have some really great speakers, and we hope to bring you interviews with many of them and see some of you here. So thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit faithandfreedom.com.